Hey, what's up, you guys? This is Bert. I'm the lead pastor at True North Community Church. Thanks for tuning into our podcast. I'm going to have a little something to say to you at the end, but for now, let's dive in.
So, we're in week three of a sermon series called Mixtape, the Pop Culture Throwback Gospel. A little bit of inside information about the making of Mixtape. There is a rumor that the working title of this series was perhaps I Love the 80s. There's also a rumor that maybe, one member of the teaching team guiltily confessed she did not love the 80s, and perhaps mercy was had upon her, and she was given a special dispensation to talk about the 90s. And some of you were like, come on, lady, you don't like the 80s. It's not that I have a vendetta against the whole decade. I just don't remember a lot of it. Some of you guys were like, girl, you partied? No, it was my bedtime. So I think you just can't help but have a fondness for the decade in which you were a teenager, right? Some of you are teenagers right now, and you're like, whatever, I hate my life. I also hated my life, solidarity. But I think the culture of the time can be that much sweeter because it's what you take solace in. You know, you go to high school and all day it's like anxiety and angst and lust and like drama and loneliness and lust and homework and lust, and you like get home and what do you take comfort in? It's like music, movies, TV shows, and that stuff has a special place in your heart for the rest of your life. So for me, that was a particular genre of music from the 90s. I'm going to show you a picture of me at age 14 and let you guess what that genre was. Longwood Junior High School, 1995. So that's me and my boyfriend at the time, and his t-shirt says Pearl Jam, and mine says Nirvana, because we were grunge kids. Grunge music, for those of you guys who were not born yet, once upon a time in the city of Seattle, there was a movement of young musicians who, in contrast to the 80s, when a lot of rock and roll was like, explosions, macho, hairspray, spandex, stadium, like, started this new kind of rock and roll that was like flannel, sad, crunchy distortion, mumble, mumble, scream, and you're like, what did he say? I'll check the liner notes. An albino, a mosquito, my libido. And you're not any closer to understanding, you know? I loved grunge music. I loved this because it was great music if you were sort of a misfit or a sad kid, which I was. Somebody had gotten me a subscription around that time to Teen Magazine. So this kind of thing would arrive in my mailbox and I'd be like, I'm never gonna be those girls. And I don't care about my love horoscope and like diet, blah, blah. Like, I just don't, and I'm even if I wanted, I could never be that perfect. I can't be those girls. But maybe I could be these girls. because I have $5 in a thrift shop down the street, and I also lost my hairbrush. And this just felt like, because the other thing about grunge music, it was very visceral. This isn't a word we use a lot in everyday life, but viscera, the guts. So like visceral music, those deep gut feelings that a lot of us feel as teenagers. It felt honest, it felt alive. And for me, that was a truer representation of what my daily life was like. It wasn't this kind of like happy bubblegum stuff. It was like, I was having a tough time. I think it also spoke to some of the larger grief. You know, when you're a teenager, you also start to become aware of the larger world in a new way and things that are going on in the world, which is troubling sometimes. And I remember being troubled. So grunge music kind of spoke to that. One of the famous grunge songs, of course, was by a band called Pearl Jam, and it was Jeremy. And if you've ever seen the video for Jeremy, I'm gonna show you a clip in a minute, but it's about a school shooting. Which I hate that is still topical. Pastor Matt told me that this January alone, this year, 2018, 11 school shootings already, like knife in the guts, you know, like it's just, so Pearl Jam, grunge music didn't pretend we're in this happy little bubble. It was like addressing that kind of stuff. What Pearl Jam did with this video was really interesting. It was complex First of all, they were grieving this. They were in no way celebrating this violence. And they were also trying to get inside the head of this child and what led up to this, and like having empathy for this kid and what he was experiencing, asking questions about why did this happen, challenging stereotypes about where does violence happen. So I'm going to show you the first minute, and then we'll talk about this a little.
And the news media plus a lot more.
It is very relevant in America today.
Is conjured up in you, and it's talking about something sad and something real with complexity and with honesty. And some of you guys are like, why are you showing me that in church? Like, I brought my friend here and I promised them that the pastor was funny and inspiring. Like, what'd you do with Bert? To which I reply, guys, he is fine. He is safe in the office, and I will untie him when I am ready. Why am I showing you this video? Because this video and a lot of grunge music was part of a long and ancient human tradition that also threads all the way through the Bible, and that is called lamentation. Lamentation is just the passionate expression of grief. It is a big theme in the Bible. It's a theme in our human lives. It can take a lot of forms. In the Bible, it can take the form of song, writing, public speech or protest, or like public gestures. There's all of that is biblical. All of that still happens today, obviously. And the thing about lamentation is, it is not easy to watch. It's not easy to listen to. But if we can master the art, or even practice the art of lamentation and of how to listen to and respond to lamentation, our lives become healthier, our relationships become more honest, healing can happen, and ultimately lamentation changes the world. So that's why I showed you that video in church. Now, a lot of people think of the Bible as sort of all stained glass and pastel cherubs and dusty verses and whatever. So I want to counter that. I want to get us a little more comfortable with the idea that the Bible is full of lamentation. So I thought we'd play a little game I call grunge lyric or Bible verse. I went through the Bible and I pulled out some examples of lamentation. I interspersed them with grunge lyrics. So now I want to test your knowledge. And I will read you a verse. And if you think it's a grunge lyric, I want to hear you say rock. And if you think it's a Bible verse, I want to hear you say amen. So let's get started. Number one, the churning inside me never stops. Days of suffering confront me. I go about blackened, but not by the sun. What do you guys think? I heard a lot. You guys did better than any other service. That's from the Bible. Very good. That's from the book of Job. Job was one of the all-time sufferers of the Bible. Lamentation can be either personal, like a personal loss, or it can be a bigger communal, national thing, like grieving school shootings, any kind of larger communal suffering. Job's lamentation was a personal one. He lost his health, his property, and almost his entire family died. So in the book of Job, he's grieving this, he's lamenting, and his friends have a really hard time just receiving this lamentation and being compassionate. So they argue with him, and they try to explain, well, why all this has happened to him? And that leads to a fabulous book. So no, it actually is a beautiful book. You should check it out. But sad. Next, number two, grunge lyric or Bible verse. Times are gone for honest men, and sometimes far too long for snakes. What do you think? Rock, very good. The Black Hole Sun by Soundgarden. If you want to know the backstory behind this one, you're going to have to Google it because I'm less educated about this. So next, number three, last one. Like cages full of birds, their houses are full of deceit. They become rich and powerful and have grown fat and sleek. Rocker, amen.
Amen.
Amen. You guys, yes, this is from the book of Jeremiah. This would be an example of a more communal, a larger lament. Jeremiah was a prophet, and the prophets had a job description in the Bible, which was basically delivering God's messages to the people. Prophecy was not like fortune telling, future telling. It was like, no, God has something to say. Often the core of a prophet's message was something like, guys, you're God's people. God passionately loves you. Everything you need is being provided by God. But you are running off after all these little g gods and following them, and it is leading you into like dishonesty and deceit and adultery and greed, and you're running into the arms of your own destruction. Come back to the big G God of love and compassion who desires you. That's sort of a lot of the prophets in a nutshell. Sometimes in the Bible, like then the people would turn to that. Sometimes not. In Jeremiah's case, they did not. So because they didn't listen to the little lamentation, they had a huge lament. Later, they had what turned into an entire book of the Bible called Lamentations, because they did run into the arms of their own destruction. So then they ended up mourning the loss of their homeland, the destruction of their temple, feeling like God had turned his back on them. So, you know, in the end, God restores them, but there's a huge period of lamentation in between. So I don't know if you're maybe detecting a running theme about lamentation. It's that, number one, it speaks to things that are vital and important to say and to us as human beings. And yet, as human beings, we often have an aversion to listening to lamentation because it's difficult. It's like grunge music. There's discord. It's messy. It doesn't come neatly packaged to us in the form that we might like. This is true just of a regular personal grief. If you've ever suffered a really like paralyzing grief, or someone near you has, you know that we don't always respond well to that. Like, people don't always know how to deal with that. My new favorite podcast is something called Terrible, thanks for asking. And it's hosted by a woman named Nora McInerney. So Nora McInerney, when she was 31 years old, in the space of 6 weeks, lost her dad to cancer, miscarried a baby, and lost her husband to brain cancer. So like a worst nightmare in the space of 6 weeks. So she began to write as a way of dealing with this. Now, Nora McInerney was not only very honest about her grief, but she's also very smart and she's very funny. And I think she's a cool example that lamentation can live side by side with gratitude and with humor, and it doesn't always look the way we think it does. She wrote a book I highly recommend called It's Okay to Laugh, parentheses, crying's cool too, Nora McInerney. So one of the things she talks about is how people are often uncomfortable with her grief. And she writes, people want me to grieve, sort of. They want me to be sad, but not so sad that I get drunk and cry at a stylish bar downtown. They want me to be happy, but not so happy I go on a date with a man in public and maybe let him kiss me. They want me to move on, but not too quickly and with one eye trained on the rearview mirror. They want me to grieve, but they don't want me to be a downer. Like, be mostly happy. And if it's not too much to ask, compartmentalize and schedule my grief for convenient times, like perhaps from 7 to 9 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings. Be kind, we post on Facebook, for everyone you meet is facing a hard battle. And then we go about our business, doing our best not to look at the hard things. So I want to talk about how we listen to lamentation. How can we learn this skill? And later I'll talk about how do we lament. Because listening to lamentation is hard. And how much more so when we suspect that like the message of the prophets, that lamentation may contain something that's asking us to make a change or examine ourselves. We don't like it, we're humans. We don't like to be criticized, we get defensive, you know? Even if it's in a space of like, it's safe to change. You're loved by God, therefore it is safe to receive criticism because you're okay, like at the core with God. But this is very difficult. It's difficult on a personal level and on a bigger level. If you drive by a protest that you don't agree with or see somebody make a public gesture, it is so easy to be like, whatever. Or if your spouse comes to you and has a problem. This was something I feel like it took my husband and I forever to master this. We actually have not mastered it, but we're better at it. And when we got better at it, it changed our marriage. Because he would come to me and say like, hey, you did this and I'm ticked. And you know, that is a lamentation. At the core of that is like, I'm hurt. But lamentation doesn't always come packaged in the neat way we want it. It's like, hey, like you did this. To which my response would be like, yeah, well, you did this. Like, which is super productive, as we all know. You know, when somebody says, you did this, even in angrily, what they're saying is, I'm hurt. And what they want to hear in response is like, you are hurt. Like, grief wants to be transmitted and received. There's lamentation wants to be met with compassion. So, but too often, like, we hear, I'm hurt, whether on a personal or a larger level, we hear, I'm hurt, and we're like, well, I'm hurt, or I'm hurt, and like, well, we're all hurt, or I'm hurt, well, get over it, or like, I'm offended by you being hurt, or like, well, if you didn't blah, then you wouldn't be hurt. There's all kinds of yummy human responses we come up to, I'm hurt. But what it boils down to, that I think God's design for lamentation is that I'm hurt is met with, you are hurt. And whether in a big or a small scale, if we can respond, you are hurt, and deal with that first, we will get to our grievances, right? But they don't happen at once. It's like when we're little kids, one of the first things we learn is take turns. Take turns. So if somebody's hurt, you take turns. And I've had to learn that when my husband comes to me and says, like, you did this, I need to be like, okay, tell me about that. I didn't realize it. Or like, tell me what I did. Tell me how you feel. We'll deal with that first. And then even if I have a legitimate grievance, like, that comes second. This is what we try to do as followers of Jesus, right? You first. This is very difficult. This is tough stuff. Because when we reply all those things to I'm hurt, basically what we're saying is like, make me comfy. This is uncomfortable. Like, make me comfy. Whereas like the Christ-like response, when we say, I'm hurt, Christ says, I see you are hurt. I'm coming to you. Do you see? Like, as humans, we're like, make me comfy. But Christ says, I'm coming. And that's offered to us as another option. We can choose business as usual, or we can try to live in this different way, which is freeing. It feels better. It feels better. So this is a tall order. It takes guts to live like this. I'm grateful for a verse in the book of James, which is easy to remember and kind of gives us some handles on how to practice this. James chapter 1, verse 19 says, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. You must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. Quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry. This is an amazingly good template for how to respond to lamentation. Now, when we practice this, we're not just doing this as a nice favor for the other person. We're also doing this for the well-being of our own souls. Like, remember when you were little and you'd make a face like, or like whatever face you made, and your mom would say, you better be careful, your face is gonna stay like that. If we kind of go like this, every time somebody says I'm hurt and we're like, or like whatever, we might stay like this. Jesus explicitly warns, if we don't listen, that even the understanding we have will be taken away. One of the saddest things that Jesus can say about a person in the Gospels is that they have a hardened heart. And our hearts don't usually get hardened all at once. It happens little by little. It happens this by this by this. Our hearts harden. And at the time that he was walking around on the planet, he loved these people so very much. And part of the way that he loved them was expressing lamentation to them. And in that lamentation was hidden a gift. It was a new way of seeing. It was a new way of being. That is often at the core of that messy lamentation we don't want to hear. And people often didn't want to hear it back then either. So he quoted the prophet Isaiah, and he said in Matthew chapter 13, verse 15, For the hearts of these people are hardened, and their ears cannot hear, and they have closed their eyes, so their eyes cannot see, and their ears cannot hear, and their hearts cannot understand, and they cannot turn to me and let me heal them. Sometimes in the difficult packaging of lamentation is something that can heal us and transform us. I want to have a soft enough heart to receive that. Now that's a gutsy practice. That's a hard, rigorous thing to do. It takes guts to be compassionate, to listen. It literally takes guts, because listen, this is a pretty cool fact. I'm not the first person ever to preach on this, but I gotta share this with you. When you see in the Bible that Jesus meets a suffering person, the response will be something like this. If we could go to Luke chapter 7, verse 13. When the Lord saw her, his heart overflowed with compassion. His heart overflowing with compassion is a really lovely English translation of a Greek word, which is splagnitsomai. You like that, right? You know you want to say splagnitsomai. So what splagnitsomai means is to be moved in the inward parts. That is to feel compassion. It comes from a root word which means like the entrails, heart, lungs, liver, kidneys. And it means I feel compassion. Have, you know, pity, empathy for, I am moved. This is the automatic divine response. Visceral grief brings out visceral compassion. None of us will ever do this perfectly, but Christ dwells in us at our cores, and we have the choice to practice this more and more. Our lives become more and more beautiful as we do that. The world changes when we do that. You may have to write on your heart, I have to do this, we all have to do this. Be soft. Be soft. Slow to speak, slow to get angry, quick to listen, and just tell ourselves. So this is kind of my dream for this congregation, that we might have like soft hearts, strong guts. Okay, let's move on. How to lament, because we're all in the same human boat together. We have all had cause to lament at some point in our lives. Some of you are lamenting or grieving something deeply right now. So how do we do that? Not in terms of like what is the form that you take, because it can take a lot of different forms. But the thing is, there's an occupational hazard to lamentation, especially when you are kind of in a season of lamentation for a long time. And that occupational hazard is despair. A lot of the grunge musicians that I loved in the 90s are dead now, because they committed suicide or because they OD'd. And that's a lot of grief to carry for a long time without any like hope to temper it. How are we supposed to have hope in our darkest seasons of grief? Again, just like be soft, like slow to speak, quick to listen, it's a simple practice but a difficult one. If we can, in our seasons of lamentation, if we can hang on to this story that is at the guts and the core of our faith. And the story goes like this. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's a weekend story. Party! It's the story of like, so Good Friday, we have the crucifixion. It is the worst possible thing that can happen. It is evil is in charge and love dies. Hope is gone. Friday. Then comes Saturday. Lamentation. Nothing to do. Stillness. Powerless. Grief, lamentation. But then, Sunday, new life, resurrection. And it's not the same life that was happening on Thursday, right? It's not like we get Thursday back. But something of what died on Friday, God brings back to life in a new way that we couldn't expect. It often surprises. Sometimes it delights. It causes celebration. We cannot picture it on Saturday. But on Saturday, it may help us to cling to the hope that there is a Sunday. For you, that may just begin, number one, with remembering that Christ still has that for us, splagnitsomai, like that deep compassion. Christ, if you are suffering, whether that's a personal or a larger lamentation, Christ is there looking on you with compassion. And you are also not alone, even though it feels like it, because your people are out there. Like, lamentation can feel very lonely, especially if it feels like the people around you don't get it. But your people are out there, and the trick is to keep walking through Saturday until you find them on Sunday. Now, when I was a teenager, I wasn't a Christian. My family wasn't religious. I wasn't, like, familiar with all these Bible stories. But my gospel, my Friday, Saturday, Sunday story, came in the form of a music video. Surprise. It was an alternative song by the band Blind Melon, and this song was No Rain. And like I said, I was a sad kid. I was a lonely kid. So this is how the video begins. She is on her Friday. Like, this is the truth of she's bringing her soul. This is the expression of who she is, this joyful tap dancing bumblebee. And she's faced, you know, with rejection and mockery. So what she starts to do is go around town. This is her Saturday. She's like walking around. She's lonely. She keeps trying. She keeps doing her tap dance for people. Nobody gets it. Everybody's looking at her like, okay, B-girl. Is there anything sadder than a child in a bumblebee costume at a construction site? Like, so, you know, this is her Saturday. She's trying. She's so lonely. Lamentation. However, then she finds a gate. And this is what's behind the gate. I think that might be my vision of heaven, like multi-generational, multicultural bumblebee dance in a field. Yeah, like, I mean, nobody, that was sort of, it's like surprise. When Sunday comes, it surprises. And when Sunday comes, there's somebody else with you. Sunday often happens like in community. Now, in whatever you're lamenting right now, I don't know what your Sunday is going to look like. I hung on to this video when I was a teenager, and it actually encouraged me. This was, like I said, this was an expression of the gospel for me. And I said, no matter how sad and lonely I am right now, one day I'm going to find my people. I'm going to find my people. And I pray this for you guys, that in your lamentation, like, that you find your people. And I pray God speeds your Saturday and you find them sooner. And you know what? Time passed, like, I did find my people, you know, I find them, and then you go through loneliness again, right? And then you find your, once in a while, you find your person, you find your people. You know what, guys? Speaking of grace surprising us, one time, one of those people even married me. So, you know, sometimes Sunday looks different than you expect. So here's what I want to do. Normally at the end of a service, we invite everybody to bow their heads and pray. I do want you to invite you to close your eyes. But what I want to do today is say a blessing over you and a benediction. Is that cool? So if you would close your eyes. My beloved friends, you are deeply loved by God. If you meet with lamentation this week, may your heart be soft and open. May your guts be strong enough for compassion. May God give you the grace to be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry. And if you are lamenting, may you remember Jesus' deep, visceral compassion for you. You are not alone, and you are loved. You're not the only one lamenting. You're not alone. May you keep walking through your Saturday. May the grace of God go with you. You can open your eyes. And before we get started with the next round of worship, everybody put your hand on your guts and say this word with me. I'm going to say it. I want you to say it with me. Splaknitsomai. Can you say it? Splaknitsomai. Rock. Thanks.
Hey, thanks once again for taking the time to listen. It's an honor to have you with us. If you'd like to support our church financially and help us continue to put this content out there for free, that would be a really big deal to us. We're completely supported by the contributions of the people that come to our church. And if you'd like to help, you can do that online at truenorthchurch.net/give, or you can do it with a text message. Just text the word True North to 77977 on your cell phone, and you'll get a prompt leading you through how to do that. Thanks again for dialing in. See you soon. Bye-bye.